Hello and welcome to the Dr. Jocker's Functional Nutrition Podcast, the show designed to give you science-based solutions to improve your health and life. I'm Dr. David Jockers, Doctor of Natural Medicine and creator of drjockers.com, and I'm the host of this podcast. I'm here to tell you that your body was created to heal itself, and on this show, we focus on strategies you can apply today to heal and function at your best. Thanks for spending time with me, and let's go into the show. I just wanted to take a moment and tell you about how important your liver health is. In fact, if you're suffering from low energy, brain fog, or unexplained belly fat, the problem could be your liver. You may not know it, but your liver is the foundation for good health. It performs more than 500 key functions, like filtering toxins, breaking down nutrients, and keeping your cholesterol in check. But over time, your liver can start to wear down, and that's when you get energy crashes, belly fat, and trouble with your memory and concentration. Fortunately, there's a simple solution. It's called Liver Health Formula. Liver Health Formula contains 11 powerful herbs and nutrients, things like milk thistle, that are clinically proven to recharge and revitalize your liver. It also helps protect against fatty liver, which is a silent epidemic affecting 100 million Americans. Liver Health Formula is manufactured in the US and it's approved by many American health professionals. And as a listener of this show, you can try Liver Health Formula and receive a free bottle of nano-powered omega-3 to keep your heart and brain healthy when you order today. So what a great deal. You get Liver Health Formula and a free bottle of nano-powered omega-3. Just go to getliverhelp.com/jockers and claim your free bonus gift. Again, that's getliverhelp.com, getliverhelp.com/jockers. That will get you your liver health formula and your free bottle of nano powered omega-3. So take advantage of that deal today. So this podcast is an audio recording of an interview that I gave with Marcel Pick. And so she was interviewing me for her metabolic dysfunction summit. And we talked all about hyperpalatable ultra processed foods. We talked about the problems with the food industry. We talked about really how to set up your plate properly, getting the right amount of protein, healthy fats, phytonutrient rich fruits and vegetables, and so much more. We go into intermittent fasting and how it's not a one size fits all process. And we go into really how to personalize your nutrition plan. And so I think you guys are going to get a lot out of this, and please share it with somebody that you know and that you care about. And if you've not left us a 5-star review, now's the time to do that. Just go to Apple iTunes, wherever you listen to this podcast, leave us a 5-star review. That actually helps us reach more people and impact more lives with this message. Thank you so much for doing that. And also, if you want to check out Marcel's website, it's marcelpick.com. And then also on top of that, she also has the summit. So you guys can check that out in the show notes for this episode if you want to learn more about metabolic dysfunction, diabetes, hunger hormones, blood sugar. We know 93% of our country is not metabolically flexible. And so she's interviewing all the top experts on how to improve your metabolic flexibility, your ability to burn fat for fuel, balance your blood sugar. So check that out in the show notes of this podcast, and you'll get a link where you can view her summit for free. So check that out. And let's go into the episode.
So I am so excited to have you on here. You and I have done these things many times together and kind of morph into a very different idea. So thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Marcel. Always great to connect with you.
So let's dig in. You've been around for a long time in the kind of what I would call natural health, functional medicine world. And we're seeing more metabolic inflexibility, more metabolic dysfunction than we ever have in the history that I've been aware of. 93% of the population is metabolically unhealthy. Why do you think we got here? How did this happen? And how did we get to this place in which we have obesity higher than it's ever been before? And many people now are struggling to afford the new weight loss drugs out there because they can't, you know, they don't know what their other solutions are.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a real nuanced question, but, you know, I would say just food manufacturers making ultra processed foods that are hyper palatable, that people really enjoy. They, you know, light up all of our taste buds, give us a big dopamine hit. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter in our brain that helps us feel good, right? We feel pleasure with dopamine. And so we get that pleasureful feeling. And for many individuals, this can be very, very addictive. And, you know, I think probably most people have had some acknowledgement at some point where like, hey, I need to cut back on sugar. Like, you know, it's so easy to get addicted and hooked on this stuff. And it's so prevalent in our society. And when we're eating these hyperpalatable foods, they don't satiate us. And so therefore we're eating every few hours. You know, for a lot of people, they're either eating or drinking something with, you know, highly processed calories all throughout the day. And, you know, obviously that's just causing their body to, it's causing our body to produce so much insulin, causing insulin resistance. And as long as insulin is elevated in the bloodstream, you can't burn fat for fuel. So people are stuck in chronic sugar burning mode. And the more that we're burning sugar for fuel, we want to do that a little bit. But when we're in chronic sugar burning mode, we're creating rampant amounts of oxidative stress that's damaging the mitochondria within the cell. It's rusting the mitochondria. And the mitochondria will produce all the energy within the cells. And so we end up with damaged, what we call senescent mitochondria. And in order to get rid of those senescent mitochondria, we need to get insulin down so our body can undergo a process called autophagy or mitophagy. You know, when we talk about the mitochondria, where the body breaks down the older damaged mitochondria, takes the raw materials and produces new healthy mitochondria. But because we're constantly, you know, most people in society are constantly eating these foods, insulin stays elevated a majority of the time, and they undergo very little, if any, mitophagy. And so they end up with cells that are just clogged up with poorly functioning mitochondria that can't burn fat for fuel, with high insulin, high oxidative stress. We know oxidative stress is a precursor to inflammation. So they end up with chronic inflammatory conditions. So all that to say, you know, first big thing we need to do is reduce or even eliminate our consumption of these hyper palatable, ultra processed foods.
So I want to reiterate something that you said, because I think that people are confused about this. And that is that the processed food industry is very intentional about putting things in the food. Their market is they want you to have more than one serving. So I love that you brought that up, because I think that's been one of the things that's been the demise of you know, people's health overall. So what about a solution? You know, we're talking about not doing sugar. We're talking about really helping the metabolic function in a more holistic way. What are the solutions metabolically for the weight issues that we see so many people having a problem with?
Yeah. So from a nutrition perspective, I always start with three big rules. Number one is reducing sugar, processed foods, and grains, because all of those things turn into glucose in our system and they all cause a big increase in insulin. We want to get insulin down. We need insulin. We just don't want it to be elevated for a long period of time. So we come off the sugar, or we at least reduce our consumption of sugar, grains, and processed foods. We get rid of the processed seed oils. And you know, that's going to be your soybean oil, canola oil, corn oil, cottonseed, peanut oil, canola oil, you know, all of those kinds of processed seed oils. And most of the time you're going to find those in processed foods, but you know, they sneak them in things that a lot of people think are healthy, like salad dressings, even, you know, organic salad dressings. People go to Chick-fil-A or, you know, some sort of fast food restaurant. They get the salad because they're trying to be healthy, but it's loaded with, you know, a seed oil based salad dressing. So they're getting these seed oils, which drive up oxidative stress, drive up inflammation, and contribute to insulin resistance and chronic inflammation in the body. So we got to get rid of those. So we really need to be looking at our labels and really trying to get, you know, a great salad dressing is olive oil, for example, right? And so we want to switch from those bad fats to good fats, things like extra virgin olive oil, avocados, grass-fed animal products, pasture-raised eggs, coconut oil, coconut milk, right? So our coconut products, those are going to be our healthy fats, wild-caught fish. And then the third thing is doing our best to reduce toxin exposure and maximize nutrients. So the way we do that is, as much as possible, we try to get organic foods and grass-fed, pasture-raised animal products. The reason why we want to do that is because Our produce that's not organic is going to be highly sprayed with pesticides and herbicides. Those pesticides and herbicides cause damage to our microbiome, drive up inflammation in the body, create intestinal permeability, which increases our risk of chronic inflammation and autoimmunity. And on top of that, they also reduce the nutrient availability in the food that we're consuming. So when we go organic, we're getting a lot more nutrients in the food we're consuming and a lot less toxins. And that's what we want to focus on. Now, the Environmental Working Group, they have a list of the Dirty Dozen. So the plant foods, the produce that's most highly concentrated with dangerous chemicals. And then they have a list of what they call the Clean 15, which are the produce that's the lowest in these dangerous chemicals. And the general rule when you look at those lists is that if you're going to eat the outer layer of the produce, then most likely the pests will as well. And so therefore they're spraying it with a lot of herbicide, there's more competition there. So the pests are trying to get their weeds are growing. So it's going to have more chemicals on it. So what do we eat the outer layer of? Strawberries, blueberries, things like that, right? What do we not eat the outer layer of? Things that we don't eat the outer layer of are going to have less chemicals. Avocados, right? I mean, you ever take a unripe avocado? I mean, you can barely penetrate it. So there's a lot less pests. I mean, there are like some fungal species that can sometimes get the avocado, but it's a lot less. And so they don't need as much chemicals there. Bananas, right? That would be another example. So what you want to do is as much as possible, trying to go organic with your animal products, trying to get grass-fed, organic, pasture-raised animal products. Again, reduce the toxins, increase the nutrients. So that's kind of the baseline foundation. Now, let's go into setting up our meals. So when you eat, you want to prioritize protein. I recommend 30 to 50 grams of protein in a meal, or sometimes more, in some cases less. If you're the average individual, about 150 pounds, you want at least 30 grams of protein in your meal. If you're very lean, maybe 120 pounds or less, you probably can get away with 25 grams or so. And the reason why I use that number is when we eat a meal, we want to hit our leucine threshold. Leucine is a branched chain amino acid, and it's the key branched chain amino acid that stimulates muscle protein synthesis. And so the more muscle we have and the healthier our muscle tissue, muscle itself acts as a reservoir for pulling glucose out of the bloodstream and improving insulin sensitivity. And of course, it gives us strength, endurance, makes us look better, feel better. So we want to support our muscle tissue. Protein is the macronutrient that supports our muscle tissue the best. And so we want to hit our leucine threshold. Most proteins, they have about 10% leucine. If you're looking at like collagen protein, it's going to be a lot less. It has very little leucine. But outside of that, most of the plant proteins, all the animal proteins other than bone broth collagen are about 10% leucine. And so roughly if you hit the leucine threshold, depending on the individual, average individual, 150 pounds, it's going to be about 3 grams. And so 30 grams of protein, you hit that leucine threshold. Also, that protein really provides satiety. So you feel satiated. And that will help you obviously go longer periods of time without needing to eat. And protein actually will help with fat burning processes in the body. It's metabolically, it helps increase your overall metabolism. So 30 to 50 grams, perhaps more if you do a lot of strength training, you're an athlete, perhaps a little bit less if you're really, really lean, but somewhere in that zone should be good for most people. And then you want to pair that with healthy fats. And, you know, I already talked about where you're going to get your healthy fats. A lot of times they're in your protein sources. So if you're doing steak, you're also getting a lot of healthy fats if you're doing grass-fed steak. So, but in some cases like chicken breast, you need to add more fat to it, like extra virgin olive oil or have some avocado with it or something like that. But with fats, we want somewhere between 15 to 30 grams of healthy fat in a meal. Some people like myself, I can do high amounts of fat and feel great. I can do a meal, lots of protein, lots of fat, and I feel fantastic when I do it. But other people, because they typically have very sluggish bile flow and congested bile ducts, in some cases they don't have a gallbladder, they feel nauseous when they do, you know, more than 20, 25 grams of healthy fats. What I found is that I've never found somebody that couldn't handle at least 15 grams, right? About 15 grams of healthy fat in a meal. Typically, most people are going to be fine. So you kind of want to find what your fat threshold is, how much fat you can handle with, and feel good, right? And that will help you feel satiated. The healthy fats provides fat-soluble nutrients in your system. They help you absorb more nutrients out of the food you're consuming, and they provide satiety, and they help stimulate fat burning. And then once you get those macros right, then fill your plate with colorful fruits and vegetables. So depending on what you're eating, you know, you might want berries, or you might want, you know, green leafy vegetables, bell peppers, tomatoes, you know, try to get a lot of colors and lots of plant-based food to just kind of fill out the rest of your plate and your meal. And that's basically what you want to do. And if you do that, you're going to have good blood sugar stability. And that's going to help you go longer periods of time without food, without feeling cravings, have better metabolic flexibility. You see, right after a meal, your blood sugar naturally is going to go up. Even if you eat a lower carb meal, it's naturally going to go up, and your body should be burning that as fuel or storing it in your, you know, muscle tissues or your liver as glycogen. And then once it gets to kind of a certain zone and insulin comes down below a certain threshold, then your body should go into fat burning mode. And if it's good, if it's metabolically flexible, it's an easy switch. And when you go into fat burning, now that those fatty acids provide a great fuel source for all the cells of your body other than the brain. For the brain, we need glucose, and we also need a smaller chain. See, fatty acids are too big to get into the blood-brain barrier. So the liver takes fatty acids, converts them into a small chain water-soluble molecule called a ketone, beta-hydroxybutyrate, and that will cross the blood-brain barrier and get up into the brain and provide a fuel source for your brain. And when this happens, you actually feel really good. You feel energetic. When beta-hydroxybutyrate gets up into the blood-brain barrier, at a certain level, it hits a threshold, and then that signals to the brain to shut down inflammation in the brain. So it actually stops inflammatory cycles. And a lot of people are dealing with irritability, anxiety, depression, you know, wide range of different issues that are a result of brain inflammation. And what happens is when the brain's inflamed, it's kind of this never ending, like this vicious amplifying cycle called the inflammasome, like the inflammasome is triggered. And so when ketones are elevated in the brain, because we're burning fat for fuel, we're taking longer periods of time between meals, we're practicing intermittent fasting, one of the best ways to do this. Now we shut down brain inflammation, right? Or we significantly reduce it. And then that also helps balance what we call our glutamate to GABA ratio. So glutamate is the gas pedal in the brain. So it's telling us, you know, it's helping us think sharply and quickly, have great memory recall. We love glutamate, but it needs to be balanced with the brakes. We need GABA to help calm it. Otherwise, we get overexcited, we get irritable, we get anxious. And when we have brain inflammation, we end up with high glutamate, low GABA. And what does that result in? Irritability, impulsiveness, anxiety. It also results in brain cells becoming hyperactive and creating something called neuroexcitotoxicity, where they're so close to threshold that they're firing out and they end up dying and spewing out contents into other neurons, and almost like a domino effect, causing all these different neurons to die off. And that can result in depression, sluggish thinking, brain fog, right? And ultimately down the road to neurodegenerative conditions, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, issues like that. So, you know, blood sugar is intimately related, you know, your good blood sugar balance intimately related to your brain health, as well as, you know, your ability to burn fat for fuel. And if you follow these kind of principles right here, you can set yourself up to not only have a really good, lean, healthy physique, lots of energy, but also great brain function throughout the course of your life. I just wanted to interrupt this podcast to give you an important announcement. You see, many people around the world are deficient in this one crucial mineral, and they don't even realize it. In fact, it's the second most abundant mineral in your body. Every one of your cells contain it and need the mineral to function. But unfortunately, studies estimate that 1 out of 4 people, 25% of our world, is deficient in it. And I'm talking about zinc, of course. Zinc is an essential mineral that your body doesn't create or store, meaning daily intake is required. And my friends over at Purality Health have a new rapid absorbing, delicious zinc That's a great way to boost your zinc levels and ensure your body's getting this critical mineral delivered to every cell in your body. With just one tablespoon a day, you can boost your immune system, improve your memory, reduce inflammation, regulate your hormones, and so much more. Now, the best part is that Purality Health Zinc is one of the most easily absorbed oral forms available today. For a limited time, they're offering a special buy one, get one free deal, which is backed by a 180-day money-back guarantee. So if for some reason you don't like their zinc, you can get your money back. So there's no risk, and you can take advantage of this buy one, get one free deal on their zinc. All you need to do is visit zincimmunity.com/DRJ. That's all one word. zincimmunity.com, one word, /DRJ to access this exclusive deal. So go out, get yourself some zinc, start seeing the improvement in your immune system, your memory, your inflammation, your hormones today.
So what about the timing of foods? I mean, there's a lot of controversy now for some women that don't feel well when they're doing intermittent fasting, or if they're doing, you know, ketogenic diet as well. Where does that fall into this perspective? Hormonal health plays a part in this. So we know that changing the diet, stopping sugar, adding organics as much as possible is really crucially important. But what do we say to those women that say, you know what, I've tried intermittent fasting, my weight has not changed, and I don't feel well when I do the intermittent fasting, or I do keto is a rule of thumb for my diet?
Yeah, well, first I would check, you know, to look at what you're eating and making sure you're following the recommendations I just talked about. So everything I just talked about, you know, I talked about all that before I talked about intermittent fasting or anything along those lines, because that's kind of the baseline, is getting those macros right, trying to make sure we're reducing toxin exposure and improving nutrient density in the food that we're consuming. So I would definitely try to focus in on that first. And then when it comes to intermittent fasting, a lot of people think it's like an all or none, like you either have to do it every single day, like a really tight window, or, you know, you can't do it. And the good thing is, it's not like that. It's kind of like exercise, right? Like if you exercise 2 days a week, that's better than exercising 0 days a week. And for some people, there's some people that are just so metabolically fit, they can work out 7 days a week and recover well and feel great. And other people, if they work out 7 days a week, they overtrain, right? They feel awful and they don't get any gains, right? And they feel terrible and their immune system's compromised. They're getting sick more often. But I heard exercise was good for you. Shouldn't exercising every day be good? Well, it depends on your metabolic threshold, right? And it depends on, you don't want to overtrain and overwhelm your system. Well, it's kind of the same thing with fasting. Exercise, just like fasting, both of them are a stressor on our body. We call them hormetic stressors. That means that they're stressors that actually can make our body stronger and more stress resilient. But we have to get the dose right. The dose is really the key. And so for some individuals, like for me, it's no problem for me to do intermittent fasting every single day. Now, I can't do a 24-hour fast every day. Otherwise, I'll lose too much weight. I've tried that and I lose way too much weight. I can't maintain muscle mass. Some people, I was actually just talking with a colleague of ours, Dr. Terry Walls. She was telling me she's doing one meal a day. She feels better than she's ever felt, right? For her, it's working, right? But, you know, you have to find the right dose for you. That's really the key. So for a lot of women, doing it 2 or 3 days a week, where maybe you do a 16-hour fast and eat in an 8-hour window, and then the other days you're eating in a 10 to maybe 12-hour eating window, that might work for you, especially if you're working out as well, you're exercising. You know, I would say that the most challenging demographic to get to do intermittent fasting are young, lean, menstruating females who are also very busy. Typically they're really into biohacking. They want to exercise. They want to do a lot of these things. Maybe they're even doing cold plunges and stuff like that. And they have kids and they have a career, right? And so they've got all these stressors stacked and they need to really understand where their threshold for what they can handle is and dial it back during periods of time. You know, when my wife and I had twins, or my twin boys are now 8 years old, we did shifts at night because it was really tough. They were our first kids and we were trying to, you know, obviously figure things out. And it was very demanding on us. And I remember, you know, I would sleep from like 10 to 4 and she would try to sleep, but she was kind of going back and forth and she would pump. So she had some milk. I would get up at 4 and then I would kind of take over, right? In a sense, you know, and give them milk from the bottle that she had pumped into to feed them if they needed it, or kind of whatever their needs were, let her be in the bedroom so where she couldn't even hear them, right? So she could sleep till 9 o'clock or whatever it was. And, you know, during that period of time, I had to cut back on my exercise because I was overtraining. I was trying to train 5-6 days a week, and I needed to cut back to 3 days a week, right? And so you always have to see where you're at, what level of stress you're under, and then provide the right dose, okay? But intermittent fasting is an amazing strategy to help improve your metabolic flexibility. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just because maybe you've had a bad experience in the past, but try to understand, okay, where's my blood sugar at? Is my blood sugar stable? And then try to get the right dose. And then for menstruating females, there's also times of the month that are better for intermittent fasting than other times. For example, right after menstruation is really probably the best time. First 10 to 12 days, you know, we know day one is when you start seeing blood, right? So that's menstruation. Day 14 is ovulation. That's kind of the cycle. And so the first 10 to 12 days, right? Good time to do intermittent fasting, or if you were going to do like a 3-day fast or a 5-day fast or whatever kind of fasting cycle, that would be the appropriate time. Back off on that during ovulation, you know, maybe have a 10-hour eating window, consume more food, more of a feasting period of time. So this is, our ancestors went through feast, famine, cycling, where when food was available, they would eat a lot of it. Of course, they weren't eating ultra processed foods, they were eating real foods, but they would eat as much as they could because they didn't have refrigeration, and, you know, their ability to store that food wasn't anywhere near what we have today. So they tried to salt things or smoke things at times, but, you know, they had limited access to storing food. And so they would eat as much as they could because they never knew when their next meal was going to come. And so they would feast, and then they would also go through times of famine. And so this is kind of the same thing with a female cycle. Most women will say the last week before they menstruate, that's when they have the most cravings, right? That's when they notice they're most irritable. And that's because they need a higher amount of progesterone during that period of time. Yep. Progesterone helps elevate GABA. We talked about that in the brain, the breaks in the brain, calm the brain. You know, of course, they need that for proper function of their menstrual cycle. And if we're stacking a lot of stressors, we're going to have more stress hormones. The stress hormones compete with sex hormones. And so the body will always prioritize stress because stress tells it survival. It'll always try to survive today and compromise reproductive ability, right, in order to survive, right? And just makes sense from a survival perspective. And so the last week of the cycle, good time to feast, right? Have more healthy carbohydrates, more root vegetables, more fruit. And, you know, obviously stay with your protein and your fats, like I talked about, but during that period of time, eat a little bit more calories, have a larger eating window. That's what I recommend during that period of time. And then once you start menstruating, again, that's a good time to now tighten that eating window. Okay. And get your body better at burning fat for fuel. So that's how you want to do it from that perspective.
So what I love about what you're saying is that you've really individualized it. You know, we're not all the same. We all have different things that work for us. And the concept through every one of the speakers is the same concept, which is from Dr. Jeff Bland to Dr. Jen Simmons about breast cancer. It's whole foods, organic as much as possible, understanding that the food industry is not our friend. And also then, you know, having episodes of intermittent fasting as well as cold water plunges. I don't know about that part yet, but, you know, these things are really very effective. So when we look now at some of the research that's coming out, because for so long, we didn't have any research to support the fact that organic was really better. We know now from studies that have been done that organic provides more nutrients, which is something we've all thought, but now we know that. What about the studies that we have now supporting the fact that eating perhaps less, changing the window, and the quality of the food that we're eating is making a difference metabolically for people?
Like compressing your eating window? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, compressing the eating window, changing what you're eating. In my practice, I see people with astronomical changes blood work wise. And now with the new monitoring system, I encourage people to have a glucose monitor, you know, a continuous glucose monitor, and look at heart rate variability and really understand what their numbers are. It's been my experience that when they change their diet, I see dramatic changes, no matter what age they are.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, people get well. Nutrition plays a huge role in your overall health. And so if you start taking the right steps, things that we talked about here, it will make a huge difference. And if you are hitting a metabolic plateau, it's a good time to reach out to an expert like you, right? Like Marcel.
Like you.
Yeah, exactly. And so to help look at blood work to help look at a continuous blood glucose monitor. I mean, some people, for example, you know, some people, they might be drinking coffee and the caffeine is elevating their blood sugar too much, elevating their insulin. Maybe they're putting stevia in their coffee in the morning and the stevia is increasing insulin levels, right? So you don't know. So sometimes getting some biofeedback like that, like a continuous blood glucose monitor, can be really, really helpful to just kind of identify what's happening and identify any sort of patterns that may be contributing to you not accomplishing your goals.
Man, I think that's so important. And now we have so much available to people that they can really get a sense of what's going on for themselves, because we're all different. And what works for, you know, Jane down the road or Sarah down the road is going to be very, very different. So when we look at low carb, how low carb are we talking about in terms of, you know, you said fruits and vegetables at a meal, or fruits have carbohydrates in them? How, you know, are people, you're recommending that people really watch the numbers, or are you really talking about generically that they really be mindful of not using grains and not using processed foods?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think if you're incorporating intermittent fasting and other healthy lifestyle principles like exercise and stuff like that, I don't think you need to go super low carb. You know, for me personally, I'm probably consuming 100, 150 grams of carbs a day, mostly from fruit. Maybe a little bit of root vegetable. But I consume a lot of fruit and I feel really good with it. And so, but I'm very active as well. So it depends on the person's goals and it depends on their metabolism and how their body's responding to different things. Yeah. In general, if you're adding in intermittent fasting, you're compressing your eating window. The cool thing about it is it does give you some carbohydrate tolerance, meaning that your body becomes better at burning fat, more metabolically flexible. And therefore, you're able to consume a little bit more carbs when you are in your eating window, and your body will pull those carbs out, put them into the muscles and into the liver as stored glycogen. Also, the more muscle mass you build, the more carbohydrates you can, the more carb tolerance you have, because muscles are a reservoir. Muscles, the more active you are, the more our innate intelligence says, I need to have a lot of energy reserves in these muscles. So one person might be able to, for example, hold on to, let's say, 100 grams of carbohydrates in their, you know, in a certain amount of muscle mass, whereas another person, because they're very, very active, can hold 200 grams of carbohydrates. And that's key, because as they start to burn through those, that glycogen, the body wants to replace it. So when we consume the carbs, now that goes into the muscle, and there's this GLUT4 protein transporter that gets activated, particularly when we are very active, and that GLUT4 transporter will pull the sugar, right? And it actually almost acts like insulin, right? And so it lowers our need for producing insulin. And that's really key, because the body is very sensitive to the level of insulin that's in the blood. And so as long as, you know, insulin is a nutrient sensor. And so as long as insulin stays below a certain threshold in the blood, we continue to burn fat for fuel. It puts less stress on the mitochondria, so they're able to produce more energy and they have less oxidative stress in the system. And, you know, we're able to produce ketones as well for the brain. Once insulin shoots up above that threshold, for a short period of time, it can be fine. But if it stays up, now we stop burning fat. And on top of that, we actually will start to promote more inflammation in our system. And if it stays elevated for long periods of time, we start to actually build visceral fat, which is the kind of fat that surrounds our organs, that's very inflammatory for our system. So all that to say that, you know, I don't go into like in-depth, like really tight carb counts. For some individuals, they need to really try to focus in on getting into ketosis, and they're not very active. They want to do it primarily from nutrition. And in those cases, sometimes we need to bring their net carbs, so total carbs minus fiber, under 50 grams, in some cases under 20 grams, in order to get them into that place. And then for other individuals, they could be in a state of nutritional ketosis and eat 150 grams of net carbs because their body's very metabolically flexible. So it can range, but in general, if you compare it to the average American, it's all, you know, any sort of healthy diet is going to be a lot lower in total carbohydrates.
Yeah. And I think, you know, your points are so well taken with regards to, you know, Chick-fil-A or any of those places. I think we are very unaware of all the things that they add to those foods. that contribute to toxicity and contribute to our, mm-hmm. you know, disease. And in my opinion, have contributed to having so many people have so many health problems. And the beauty is it's not that difficult, you know, is changing your food first and then the ratio and then the timing. And, you know, you've been one that's been a real contributor to us being aware that intermittent fasting is incredibly important for us, that we don't need to eat all day long. And that's what many people do, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And intermittent fasting, I mean, when you start practicing this along with, you know, the setting up your macronutrients, like I talked about, for a lot of people, they only need to eat 2 days a week, you know, 2 times a day, right? I talked to you about, you know, our colleague, she's just eating one meal a day, right? So she's, I don't know how old, in her 60s. You know, she's active, but she's not doing a, you know, tremendous amount of strength training. She's not trying to really build a lot of muscle. And she feels great eating one meal, one big meal a day. She feels really good with that. And I've seen a lot of people be able to do that. Obviously, this is different for everybody. Yeah. But for a lot of people, they do well with 2 meals a day. So they're able to eat, let's say, you know, a late morning or midday meal, mm-hmm. and then kind of an early evening meal. And they feel really, really good with that. Obviously, you got to base it off of your schedule and what you're able to do. I always recommend trying to finish eating at least 3 hours before you go to bed. Oh, okay. Yeah. I think that's key for setting you up for a good night's sleep. Of course, I know everybody's schedules can be weird and different. But you know, there is research also that early time restricted feeding, or where you're having your eating window earlier in the day, let's say 10 a.m. to 4, 10 a.m. to 6, or even 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., right? Or something like that, is actually more beneficial for your body. The problem is compliancy with that, because, you know, a lot of individuals, you know, a lot of us, dinner becomes a social time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got our family there. Like for my family, that's when we sit down together. So dinner tends to be more of the social time. So it can be harder to pull off, but if that's something you're open to, you can try that out as well. And a lot of people notice that they feel even better and they're able to get into fat burning mode quicker.
Absolutely. So if people want to learn more about you, how do they go about doing that? You've given us so much information to talk about and think about. Where can they find more about Dr. Jockers?
Sure. You just go to drjockers.com. It's my website. And I also have a great podcast, Dr. Jockers Functional Nutrition Podcast. Also, you know, I'm on YouTube and all the different social media channels as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And now people have a different perspective about how to do intermittent fasting, which I love.
Well, that's all for this show. And I want to thank you again for spending your valuable time with me today. And if there was something you heard in this interview that you have questions on or you want to dive into deeper, then drjockers.com is the best place to go. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider taking just a quick moment and giving us a great review. Your reviews help us influence more people and transform more lives. And if you took something valuable away from this episode, then please share it with someone in your life you know it can help. We'll see you soon on a future podcast. Be blessed, everybody.